we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a letter from the Irish Times, read by Peter Donaldson.
Sir, I have just received a letter bearing one of the new Dracula stamps. The stamp has been franked with a message, blood donors are always needed.
Thanks, F.B. Grove Annesley of County Cork, for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Francis, who got into a stew over stocks?
Oh, is it these markets? I think the Hang Seng got into a state, which had a knock-on effect with the Dow Jones Index, which pulled out the FTSE. Something like that. I couldn't make head or tail of it. I'm so glad you asked this, because I've been carrying this around all week. It's exactly 10 years ago since the London Review of Books carried an article by a Labour front bencher, which said, 29th of October 1987, saying that the 1990s will not see the continuing triumph of the market, but its failure. It was a front bencher, the trade and industry spokesman, somebody called Blair, Tony Blair. And 10 years on, he's been proved right. They've all gone AWOL and higgledy-piggledy and topsy-turvy.
Wonderful economic system, isn't it, that the future of nations is decided by hyperactive young men in brightly coloured jackets shouting at each other. Marvellous idea for a political theory.
I've got the answer to that, because I was watching Channel 4 News, and they were cutting around all the markets, and there were all these young sort of type A personality men shouting and waving their arms around. And I think that they could prevent all these global fiscal crises if there was a rule brought in that no one was allowed to work on any stock exchanges who was under 65. Just have little old ladies doing it. So that their attitude is, you know, well, everyone's saying sell copper, but copper's been very good to me over the years, so I think I would just stay put. You know, that would take all the instability out of the system. Cardigan shares rocket through the world.
The question concerned the recent volatility on the world's stock markets. However, unlike 10 years ago, there was no sign of panic. On the contrary, it was business as usual, as traders dismissed the turmoil with a snort, admittedly through a rolled-up £10 note. Jeremy, who made a trunk call to the great she-elephant?
Christine Hamilton?
No, she is the great she-elephant.
No, that's what I mean. I was just looking for help. Who made a trunk call to
it
the...
It is a royal question, certainly.
Prince Charles has been abroad in the Commonwealth talking about... Well, he's been talking about modernising the monarchy.
He was talking about women's breasts.
Was he?
He was. He was in Swaziland, where I believe the Queen is known as the Great She-Elephant.
The Queen of Swaziland, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. No, not the Queen of England, steady on.
He started going on about the monarchy. He wants it to be modernised, but only up to the point where the king can sort of be photographed wearing casual jean-style trousers. But he said that we shouldn't get rid of all tradition, because some tradition is good, because, after all, it's traditional and part of our heritage. And one of the traditions that's obviously good is that if your mum happens to be the queen, you get to be the king. That's a very good tradition. And it wouldn't be a very good tradition for if you're a woman, for you to be able to become queen just because your mum's queen, because women shouldn't become queen, obviously, because women are dainty and have fainting fits and die of embroidery when they're 30. So it wouldn't be any good for his sister to become queen, because then it'd be stupid, because you'd have a woman queen then. And that would make no sense at all. No good a woman being queen unless it's your mum.
Yes, goodbye. I hate to interrupt, but it was a... Prince Harry, meanwhile, is also in Africa on safari, where he's learning how to identify different types of elephant. For example, if it has small ears, it's an Indian elephant. Larger ears means it's an African elephant. And truly enormous ears means it's daddy. 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, whose taped measure proved size isn't everything?
Oh, this is my namesake, Neil Hamilton, and his wife, the she-elephant, who... They had this clever ploy. They thought they'd play a secretly recorded tape of Al Fayed on the phone, Mohammed Al Fayed, on the basis that it would show what a reprehensible character he was, and they seemed to think that we would be so stunned by this that we would immediately assume that Neil Hamilton was innocent of all charges. Didn't quite work like that, and it was, I think, well, you were probably there when he said, I think journalists had a little bit of trouble concentrating on what the gist of their argument was, because the tape seemed to consist entirely of Mohammed Al-Fayed worrying that he was genitally challenged. And Tiny Rowland, who was on the other end, apparently said that he didn't want to get involved because his didn't work anymore. That's this is a great opportunity, this question, just to be rude about very rich people, isn't it?
It's also rather impressive that he wasn't so much complaining about it as boasting about it. Rather unusual.
Yes.
Among men, and that he was boasting about it. And Hamilton thought that this tape somehow exonerated him and proved that he hadn't taken cash in brown envelopes. If you listen to the tape, it's like those old Beatles LPs that people listen to backwards to get secret messages. If you listen to Mohammed Al-Fayed saying, I have a very small member, you then realise he's talking about Neil Hamilton.
In my pocket, it was probably yours, yeah.
This is Neil Hamilton, who failed to have the cash for questions inquiry reopened and now faces a bill of £50,000. As Mrs. Hamilton said, this is going to cost us a packet, so could someone please send us another one? Most of the tape designed to exonerate Mr. Hamilton actually concerned the size of Mr. Al-Fayed's penis, which he calls his Boutros Ghali, or, when excited, his Boutros Boutros Ghali. Two points to Andy Allen. Listen to this.
I don't want a small body, so I'll go. I would hate my disappointment to show. There's nothing for me here, so I will disappear. If she turns up while I'm gone, please let me know.
Alan, which shadowy figure spoiled the party atmosphere?
I think this is a topical question.
It is.
I think it's about the remake of Halloween, which has just happened. I mean, there. I think it's Halloween too. There is. There's William Hague tucked up in his cot with his Ovaltine and his teddy bear and his fire. He thinks everything's all right. The doors are locked. Downstairs, there is a noise. It is the undead. It is risen. It's got staring eyes and its hands wave about and it's got a shock of mad blonde hair. Rod, Heather and Emu. Come to peck little William to death. It's all about, I think it's all about Heseltine making a bid, marching his troops towards the sound of Emu. It's another split in the Tory party. Three people behind Heseltine and seven behind me. I should think that's it.
Well, the question was actually about Ian Taylor, but yours is a much better answer. Much better answer, so you get 2 points anyway. Right, and the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. Francis, who really, really wants us to remember?
The Spice Girls. Well, that's easy enough. Next question. It's Remembrance Day, Armistice Day. Dame Vera Lynn, Old Spice, has teamed up with all the other little spices. She's a bit of a dead loss.
Is there a British Expeditionary Force? I didn't think that's why we fought the war.
It's because they're the new forces, sweethearts, the Telegraph said, because in the war, Vera Lynn hasn't really worked since 1945. She always crops up when there's a bit of a war. And she used to be the forces sweetheart, and now it's the Spice Girls' turn to stir the privates. And they did the lesson, they did the reading, which was very sweet. They took a line each and they said, the going down of the sun in the morning, we will remember them as Zigga-Zigga.
Question concerned the Spice Girls, who appeared with Dame Vera Lynn to launch this year's Poppy Day appeal. Lest they were considered inappropriate to the job, the girls had researched their history very carefully. But as none of them studied Latin, all five were horrified to discover about World War XI. Things became a little confused when Ginger Spice spoke about the Normandy landings as she thought they were next to Harris carpets on the North Circular. Jeremy, which admiral is an arch critic of an admirable plan?
Various plans have come up to do something about homelessness. One is to put 60 beds in Admiralty Arch so that young homeless men can go in and try and protect their rear from the admiral. And the other one is the army is going around press ganging. The army is preying on homeless young men going around saying, why not join the army? These people are vulnerable. I mean, you could go up to people and say, oh, would you like somewhere to sleep and regular meals and plenty of exercise? Well, become a prisoner.
Andy, listen to this. I Want You Back by Several Jacksons. Which boy from Brazil may be brought back to Blighty?
This is old Ronnie Biggs, who, having given, was it Nasher of the Yard? What was his name?
Sniffer.
Sniffer. Sniffer. having outrun Sniffer of the Yard.
Slipper.
For many.
What? Slipper, not Sniffer. Sniffer was the one with the bicycle saddles.
You're thinking of the very successful detective Slipper of the Yard. I'm thinking of the very unsuccessful detective Sniffer of the Yard. You got less work. Apparently we've signed a new extradition order with Brazil and a new law, and there's every possibility now that Ronnie Biggs might be shipped back over here to face hordes of cameras. Just in time for Ronnie the Musical. and that's the story. They're talking about possibly bringing him back to justice. And the only argument I can see against Ronnie Biggs facing trial is that we will all have to sit through endless, bloody, nostalgic TV programmes about the great train robbery with Jerry and the Pacemakers over the soundtrack. So I think they should leave him where he is, but
he won't. He might, because he was sentenced to 30 years. But it said that Jack Straw has the discretion to let him out almost immediately. I mean, if he comes back, he'll be out in 6 months or so, because he's suffered enough sitting in Brazil all these years, being interviewed by the British tabloids. And as long as he's not likely to reoffend, which he isn't, because you couldn't do it now, since the trains have been privatised, they don't run on time. So they'd be sitting there waiting for the Virgin Express mail van to arrive 2 days afterwards.
2 points to someone or other. Alan, what are Vickers doing with rollers?
It's not about the Krauts buying Rolls Royce, isn't it? 100 miles an hour, all you hear will be the clicking of the heels. Rolls Royce is on his uppers. The Rolls Royce is being sold to the Jerrys. And keep Heseltine very happy. Probably be invaded next time by Rolls Royces. It'd be terrible, wouldn't it? We're looking. Standing there at Dover, and there'll be a bloke with a little moustache standing in the back of an open corniche. Well, serves them right. Can you say something?
Well, I was just thinking, if we can get
anti-German.
It is, yeah. Is there a Michael Schumacher question coming up?
His last territorial claim in Europe, he said, driving into Villeneuve. Remember the fall of France? Bang, here he comes.
Did anyone see Schumacher's explanation, which is wonderful? His version was that he realised, as Jacques Villeneuve came up on the inside, that Jacques Villeneuve was taking that bend too fast and was going to end up slewing off into the gravel. So what he did was he actually turned into him to slow him down. It was sort of like so that Jacques could experience sort of passive braking, you know. It's inspired.
Traditionalists were outraged to think that Germans might control Rolls-Royce, a company as British as our very own royal family. The scores at the end of round two are, everybody, 8 points. We start round three with a letter from the Wiltshire Gazette and Herald.
The case for castration. Geldings canter happily on and off the racecourse. Animal lovers think nothing of spaying their favourite cats and dogs. Holy men of the church resorted to castration so as to ensure that choir boys' voices never broke. And yet, when faced with the escalating problem of the paedophile, we pussyfoot around, preferring to house, feed and guard him at enormous expense to the taxpayer. I suggest, as a matter of urgency, that a committee of experts be set up to start the ball rolling.
Thanks to Alistair Morris of Oxford for that. Francis, where is art literally a load of old rubbish?
Is it Vincent van Gogh?
No.
No?
Turner Prize.
Yes.
Turner Prize.
Turner
same
Prize.
Thing,
hooray. It's marvellous, the Turner Prize. All these people get prizes for all this tat that they do. It's brilliant. You can just, all you do is you get like a glass of water with a slinky in it and half a grapefruit on top. And they give you 20 grand and you say, oh, it represents the way that life is both sort of fluid and metallic with half a grapefruit on the top. It's brilliant. It's a great idea.
Well, it was the pioneered by Neil Hamilton. He just stood there being a useless idiot and they gave him 20 grand and ran him loose.
Apparently.
These are the works of art shortlisted for this year's Turner Prize. Exhibits include some pieces of fluff, old strands of hair and bits of ash. They were on display at the Tate until just after closing on Friday evening when they were all amalgamated into a seminal piece entitled Hoover Bag, 1997. In an interesting private showing of performance art, three strippers were hired to walk about the gallery nude from the waist down, displaying their long naked legs. The promoter said they were so successful, he's expecting to open them to the public. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, how might a landslide lead to a madhouse?
It's about landslide syndrome. Professor of made-upology at the University of Bonkers has come up with landslide syndrome. And what it is they reckon that MPs will be very traumatised after the election. Tory MPs will be suffering from the guilt, which survivors often suffer from after a massacre, in which they were spared, and so they'll be all freaked out by that. And a lot of Labour MPs will be traumatised as well, because a lot of them never expected to be MPs. They were just pissed on their stag night, and they put their name down as a bet. And then they sober up, hanging naked from the fourth bridge, finding out that they're an MP. And so they're all freaked out. They've got to come and live in London and have, you know, researchers and all that malarkey, you know. Which, if you're a humble crofter and not used to the ways of the city, is probably quite alarming, I should think.
Yes, it's the news that many MPs may be suffering trauma following Labour's election victory, what psychologists call the landslide syndrome. Symptoms include the inability to concentrate, to speak coherently, memory loss, short temper, though it has been suggested they should have taken a more representative sample than just John Prescott. Psychologists have spent years building a profile of the average MP, concluding that in Freudian terms, they display an unusual mixture of oral and anal characteristics, or in layman's terms, they all talk out of their arses. Alan, who's trying to save their bacon after being accused of hogwash?
As is Sainsbury's and Tesco's and one other. And, you know how it is when you want to fry breakfast, you're actually boiling it these days. You chuck the bacon in, and all this white stuff appears from nowhere, and it's all water. And they've been injecting their bacon with water, and they've had their knuckles wrapped. There is a list. There is a government list. There is a government review. It's New Labour, New Bacon, and they've just found that it's just wet stuff.
Under an EC ruling, they're going to have to redesignate bacon as a soft drink. Call it Gammon's Spring. Sparkling tap water with a twist of pig. Liver and bacon cordial.
And the scores at the end of round three are Andy and Alan 12, but Francis and Jeremy just in the lead with 13 points. Before we start the final round, here's a story seen in The Guardian.
Many overreact to a disaster at the hairdressers, but Costas Poon of New York took things calmly when the barber overdid his highlights, turned his afro peroxide white, and gave him a bald patch. Mr. Poon did not even bother to complain, Focus magazine reports. He simply kidnapped the barber, shaved his head, painted it silver, and then, for his coup de grace, glued him to his shop window.
Thank you to everyone who sent that in. Francis, your musical clue.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run? We are the boys who will stop your little game. We are the boys who will make you think again. 'Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done.
Francis, which private act of mercy was merely a myth?
Oh, I thought it was going to be about the man who's selling Hitler wine. But it obviously isn't. Well, it's obviously some anti-German story destined for Alan. whose private act of mercy was merely a myth? Oh, it's the... No, it's not the Frenchman, is it, who was a Nazi, or the German who was a Nazi.
Rather, Alan knows it.
Alan. Go on, Alan.
Mr. Tandy, who got a VC, the most decorated soldier in the First World War, and always claimed that he had Hitler in his sights and chose not to shoot him. I don't know why he didn't do that. But it turns out now that he probably didn't, because Hitler was serving 17 miles away. As Mr. Tandy was a bloody good shot, it's extremely unlikely he would have seen off the Second World War at one swoop. But I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Herbert
yeah.
Tandy...
Historians have debunked the legend of Private Henry Tandy, the British soldier who was said to have spared Hitler's life in 1918. Private Tandy had always said he'd spared the life of the small, distinctively mustachioed figure because he couldn't shoot a wounded man, and also he was a great fan of Charlie Chaplin's films. The story of Private Tandy's act of mercy originated from an entry in the notorious Hitler diaries, as serialised by the Sunday Times. They read, First World War not going too well for me today. Nearly got shot. Thank God only another 6 months to go to the armistice. Andy, who boldly went to patent a stunner?
Can I just say that Alan is drawing a Spitfire on his dude? This is a story about Star Trek and the phaser. It's a man who he tried to patent the phaser. The phaser was the thing that Jim would use to humanely stun alien life forms dressed in bits of green polythene, wasn't it?
Yes. That
was, and did this man seriously think he could invent one then, or did he?
He isn't a man, he's a laboratory.
He's a laboratory.
Yes, but it's the size of a dining room table. That's the only thing.
You have to trick them into coming into the dining room in some way, do you? Oh, I've got these placemats, you must see. Prince of Hertfordshire Villages.
It's strange how women in the future have terrific legs. You'd actually never, ever see anybody in any science fiction thing with rough legs. They are terrific. I mean, are they going to do something over the next few thousand years?
All the aliens spoke English, didn't they? Mm. And all the planet surfaces were very flat, just like studio floors.
Now, Doctor Who, it was always that chalk pit in Slough. Always the same one. They always had to act. The actors had to come out and go, as if they'd never been there before. They've been, they've been filming there for 32 weeks. Sorry, there was not much point on radio going like that. Sorry.
Especially with one that size.
Inventor Hans-Erik Herr of San Diego, California, has patented a phaser gun similar to the type seen in TV's Star Trek. The weapon is highly advanced, firing a modulated electrical charge along a stream of ionized atoms in a laser beam. The only drawback is that it's the size of a kitchen table. The victim can either be stunned with the ray gun set to low, or completely flattened by having it dropped on his head. Experts have spent years developing weapons that can destroy human life but leave buildings intact. They're known as mortgages. Alan, how might Van Gogh have had his petals ripped off?
It turns out the sunflowers weren't by Van Gogh at all. They're actually daisies in cellophane. You get them in any garage. No, they're worth about two bob, and the Japs have bought them. I've got nothing against the Japs. I'm sorry, the Germans. Japs fought a clean war, all in all, given the odd railway. anyway, this Toshida person has bought a version of the sunflowers, which doesn't work. And on television the other night, they showed how the leaves don't actually attach to the stems, and the sunflowers are sort of turd brown, and it's just a wrong, and you and I would have spotted it instant.
There's a fortune to be made, though, isn't there? Taking Japanese tourists around Woolworths. That lady there, with the blue face, that's a Giotto.
This is the allegation by art critic Geraldine Norman that the famous Van Gogh sunflowers are the work of a forger. The claim comes after detailed inspection of the signature. The owners of the work say this happened when it was delivered to them and the bloke who dropped it off had to sign for it, which is why it doesn't read Vincent Van Gogh, but Hertz Van Rentel. Art experts discovered the final proof in the faint pencil lines which can be seen in the painting. It's well known that Van Gogh never used a pencil. Reason was, every time he bought one, he'd stick it behind his ear and never see it again. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is a remote cutting from the Stornoway Gazette. It's an announcement headed Islands Artificial Insemination Services. There will be no artificial insemination service on Lewis and Harris next week due to personal circumstances.
Jeremy.
This comes from the Daily Mail. Parents from families with a history of bat ears can order a simple aid to remedy the problem in their babies. When the splints, known as ear buddies, are applied straight after birth, it takes only a week to rectify the problem. The later it is left, the longer it takes, and the cut-off age is 6 months.
Andy.
Well, this is a story from Land Rover World magazine, sent from Nick Midgley of Barnsley. In North America, two men and a black Labrador headed off in their brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee to christen the motor with a little duck hunting. Finding all the lakes were frozen solid, they drove out onto the ice and decided to make a water hole to attract their prey. Spurning things like picks and drills, they settled on dynamite as a tool. But they knew it wouldn't be too clever to plant it and run. Slipping on the ice would be all too likely. So they simply lit the 40-second fuse and lobbed it as far as they could. Unfortunately, their duck-fetching retriever thought the action had already started. It took off after the dynamite, grabbed it, and ran straight back towards them. The two men shouted and screamed until, fearing imminent death, one of them let fly with his shotgun. But buckshot won't stop a Labrador on a mission, and the injured creature merely ran to take cover right under the brand new Land Rover. Seconds later, the dog dynamite and $30,000 plus Cherokee took a one-way trip to the bottom of the lake. When the owner approached his insurance company, he was informed that sinking the vehicle by illegal use of explosives was not covered by his policy.
Alan.
I have one from the Yorkshire Post, Simon. It says, when magistrates arrived at Bradford's number one court, they were faced with an embarrassing problem. The door leading from the cells into the dock was jammed, and no one could open it. The police tried, and the court caretaker tried, but the lock would not turn. Eventually, Tom Wall, 45, a defendant on a drunk and disorderly charge, came to the rescue. He kicked the door open, and the court started proceeding.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Francis and Jeremy have 15, but Andy and Alan are our final week's winners with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Gloucester Citizen sent in by Ted Shepherd of Thirlwall.
A drunk Gloucester driver hit two cars, jumped two red lights, just missed a cyclist and collapsed on getting out of her car. She was in a hurry, she said, to get to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
Well, that's the end of the series. The news quiz will return to Radio 4 in February. Until then, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Alan Curran, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with David Spicer and Hugh Rycroft. The producer was Alan Evans.